here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. It's official. If you had a Yahoo account in 2013, it was compromised. Apple is investigating a series of reports about battery problems with some of its new iPhone 8 Plus phones. NVIDIA's CEO says Moore's Law is dead, claiming GPUs will soon replace CPUs. In the near future, you may be able to eat a robot that will heal you or provide nutrients. What? And don't mess with Amazon. A couple is facing up to 20 years in jail for stealing over $1.2 million in merch from the online shopping site. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Jeff Weston.
Yeah, man.
You're building a brand new, beautiful website.
What?
Aren't you?
No. Am I?
Oh, you're a terrible actor.
What?
This is where acting comes into play.
Oh, I didn't know we were acting.
You're supposed to act.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'm building a really cool website. Are you building a really cool website? Just because Jeff is confused doesn't mean you have to be. Visit cat5.tv/dreamhost to sign up for unlimited web hosting for your website with unlimited email accounts, MySQL databases, the latest version of PHP, WordPress, and more, and even a free domain name registration. It's less than $6 per month, so sign up today. cat5.tv/dreamhost.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. Yahoo has revealed that the major security breach in 2013 compromised all 3 billion accounts the company maintained. That's a threefold increase over the estimate it disclosed previously. The revelation contained in an updated page about the 2013 hack is the result of new information and the forensic analysis of an unnamed security consultant. Previously, Yahoo officials said that about 1 billion accounts were compromised. With Yahoo maintaining roughly 3 billion accounts at the time, the 2013 hack would be among the biggest ever reported. Yahoo officials wrote in the update, "We recently obtained additional information and, after analyzing it with the assistance of outside forensic experts, we have identified additional user accounts that were affected." The report goes on to reveal the jaw-dropping truth, saying Yahoo has determined that all accounts that existed at the time of the August 2013 theft were likely affected. The information taken in the heist may have included users' names, email addresses, telephone numbers, dates of birth, passwords scrambled using the weak MD5 cryptographic hashing algorithm.
Wow.
And in some cases, encrypted or unencrypted security questions and answers. That's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So Dave had a Yahoo account at that point.
This is Sasha's husband, Dave.
Right. So now,
so
what
can
he do?
That hey, your data was compromised. We know that your data was compromised.
Right.
Well, so, I mean, until he watches this episode, right?
Yeah.
Then he won't know that, because before it was just one in three
chance.
Some
may have been. Okay, so if you had a Yahoo account in 2013 or before, so when I signed up for it as a kid and then never canceled it.
And I did.
All of my email, the information that is connected to that account. So let's think about what that means. I sign up for online services.
Mm-hmm.
When I do that, I provide my email address as a means of connecting to that service. Mm-hmm. So if I ever forget my password, what do? I click on forgot password, and it sends
right.
me what?
A link to reset your password.
By email.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So if the user's email account was completely compromised, this, assuming Yahoo being the email account, at least that aspect of their services, then any malicious user could create a script that does forgot password on all these different services, PayPal, online banking, Twitter, Facebook, and gets that email sent to that email account and then is able to compromise the account. So then all of a sudden the account is locked. The first thing they do is change your password and that's done.
Right.
So how do you protect yourself? Like how in the future now, like you had a Yahoo account in 2013.
Right.
What do you do now?
There's so much potential for what could be compromised. And even just thinking of, okay, what was my Yahoo password? I can't even remember, but was it the same password that I used for my online banking?
Right.
See, I don't even remember what my Yahoo email was. I just know I had one.
Right. But it was connected in some way to you personally. You had to provide personal information, be it your address or your phone number, in order to activate that account. And there are emails in the inbox that are connected to you. So how do you protect yourself? Well, first of all, you've got to change your passwords. So, hey, if you had a Yahoo account back in 2013 and any of these questions are relevant to you, if you're thinking maybe I did use the same password somewhere else or maybe I have some services connected to Yahoo, you need to cancel that connection.
Yes.
Change your email account on all of your, like if Twitter points to your Yahoo account, change it to Gmail or whatever it is that you're using now and change your password on that service. Because you don't know. Somebody may have already done the forgot password routine and not done anything about it.
Right.
It might be a benign thing where they're accumulating logins and passwords.
Right.
Right? And then all of a sudden they hit. That's, you know, 0 day, if you will. You know, you don't see it coming and all of a sudden, boom, 10,000 accounts are compromised. How did it happen? They've been working at it for 4 years.
Right.
Right.
So, change your passwords.
Okay, so if this ever happens again.
Yes.
Should I just have like an email address that is just for those things? Like, how do you protect yourself? Because say email gets hacked again. Do you just, like, can I just have like a random email address that's not linked to me in any other
It's going to be linked like to you as soon as you use it.
Yeah.
So the fact is you just need to realize that your email is really a central hub of information about you.
Right.
So if you if you ever suspect that there is something malicious going on, you need to immediately change your password, do whatever it takes to make sure that your services that are connected to that email account are updated to use different passwords, for example. Change your passwords.
It might help to just always be suspicious and just change your passwords frequently.
Yes, yeah, it certainly there is something to be said for that. It's kind of security through, but then what happens if you get into a routine, I've seen this in businesses, if you get into a routine of often changing your password, people tend to fall to simple passwords.
Like adding a 1 to the end or a 2 or a 3.
This is how people get, you know, why is password 123 the most popular password? Because people don't like to have to constantly change their password.
Right.
And if you get into that routine, you will eventually fall to the fact that, oh, I already used that password. Oh, I already used that password. Okay, I'm just going to add a 1 to the end.
Right.
And that's where it becomes
Now, did we not cover, is either a news story or something a while ago, I'm going to say maybe 6 months ago, about the strongest password you can use is actually like 3 random words?
Essentially, what that feature that you're describing was covering is what's called a password recipe.
Right.
Right.
A password recipe is used to create strong passwords that you will remember, but nobody will ever be able to figure it out. And computers even can't hack it very easily at all.
Right.
So that's what you want to look at. So if you're not familiar with password recipes, get onto category5.tv and do a quick search up at the top for password recipe. Easy peasy.
Thank you. Over the last 6 weeks, 6 reports have come to light which show the new iPhone 8 Plus phones splitting apart soon after they start to be used. In all cases, the battery inside the phone has swollen, rendering the phones unusable. It is not yet clear whether the swollen batteries are a few isolated cases or are indicative of a bigger issue. The first report about the affected iPhone 8 Plus came from Taiwan Phones with a similar problem, and they have now emerged in Japan, China, Canada, Greece, and Hong Kong. In a statement, Apple said it was aware of the reports and was looking into what might have caused the fault. Apple's problems follow Samsung's experience with its Galaxy Note 7 last year. Hundreds of faulty Galaxy Note 7s were reported as faulty soon after the device launched. The scale of the failure prompted Samsung to recall and discontinue the handset. The problem was traced to a design flaw. Analyst Sam Jaffe says battery bloat typically happens at the end of a battery's useful life, explaining that having it happen soon after a product launch is troubling. So, the Samsung problem similar to the Apple problem, was a battery problem.
Yes. Right? Yeah, you call it a design flaw. That kind of makes me chuckle a little bit.
So,
look at that. Okay. A design flaw. They explode.
Samsung's exploded.
Yeah.
Apple's is bloating. Is bloating just one step below exploding? Like, are we going to expect...
If you take a lithium polymer battery or some battery that expands under use in a very, very tiny shell, because we are consumers and we demand tiny. So get a big battery, large capacity, little tiny shell, small form factor, and you've got a recipe for disaster.
So what could happen? Like, okay, so say my battery's bloating, my phone's becoming unusable. I don't know exactly how that looks. But if I was to try and squish it, could I pop the battery? Like, would I get chemical burns? Like, can I make it like even more dangerous trying to,
drill a hole to relieve the pressure?
Not smart. No, you can't push it. It's not like it's spongy. Did you ever have a BlackBerry?
No.
Okay, BlackBerry batteries were notorious near end of life for bloating. But because you can pull the battery and replace it, it wasn't that big a deal. People are like, oh, my battery's getting bloated. So they pull it out and put a new one in.
You could tell it was time.
Right. It happened with my BlackBerries all the time. But in this case, it's built into the case. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but yeah, it's dangerous.
What are some ways that you can prevent battery bloat then? Like in this case, obviously it's happening as soon as the phone.
A design flaw.
Yes, as soon as the phone is used, it's bloating the battery. Right. But
so look at, like I have a case on my phone. So this is going to make my phone warmer and it's less heat dissipation than if it was just the aluminum body or whatever it is.
Right.
So that heat causes the battery to expand during load. So if you're watching videos, for example, or playing games are, they have 3D. So they use a lot of resource power and draws a lot of battery power and causes heat.
Right.
So what can you do?
If
it's a design flaw, if it's a problem with the device itself, then there's not a lot you can do.
Well, I would say the first thing is the iPhone 8s are not that old. So...
maybe return it under warranty.
Well, exactly. You've got a one-year warranty with Apple. And if Apple is recognizing it as a design flaw, it makes me wonder if they'll provide an extended warranty on that. Not that it's been announced, but it makes me wonder if it's something that they'd be considering because there will be a legal liability factor. Mm-hmm. If they go, you're one day past your 1 year, and then the battery explodes and somebody gets burned, there's going to be legal battles that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. So, I think at some point you're going to see Apple say, okay, we'll replace your battery for free under warranty.
I think about these stories with the Galaxy Note 7 where, people had burnt pillows and things like that. Because kids, you think about it. So I'm talking about heat being one of the problems, one of the things that cause this. So you've got a kid who's playing video games in bed.
Right.
And then mom or dad come up the stairs, and what do? They shove it under their pillow.
Right.
And
or what if you're an adult?
That generates more heat.
That never happens.
What if you're an adult using like a white noise generator while you sleep? Right?
Sure.
On your phone. And it's just constantly running and you're not thinking anything of it.
So don't have it under your pillow. Get an external speaker.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you encase that under a pillow or something like that, there's no way for the heat to dissipate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny because there are some apps that will measure, like if somebody doesn't have, like a smart watch, you can get apps for your phone that you stick under your pillow for the purpose of measuring your sleep cycle. It can tell when you move and all that. That's not great if that's the case.
Right.
Because you're shoving it under the pillow.
Oh, you mean that the phone itself has to go under the pillow? It's not a device?
No, it's the actual phone. Dear.
So if the purpose, what you're trying to do to keep battery bloat from happening is keep your phone cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the case off. Is there anything else you can do? Can you do some sort of attachment to it where it dissipates the heat?
Don't do it.
Right? Could you attach something to it that would help?
No.
No?
No, it really boils down to just knowing that, hey, certain apps are going to run your device hot.
Yep.
I find, for example, when I use a VR headset with the LG G3, it gets really, really hot because the processor just goes crazy.
Yeah.
My device, the G3, will turn itself off if it gets too hot. That's annoying.
Right.
But
yes.
It's a smart feature.
Right.
And maybe, maybe there are apps that can be added to these other devices that would assist with that as well.
If you're a battery developer for phones, come up with something really good, because the last two years have been a bit tough.
And this is what it really boils down to is we can start getting into politics and stuff like that, where we can say, you know, how do you want to make change? Stop demanding smaller, thinner, bigger capacity, because the manufacturers have to keep up with consumer demand.
Right.
And if consumer demand says it has to be this, that's what happened with the Samsungs.
Yeah,
they were trying to push the envelope of technology too far too fast.
See, I'm waiting for them to deal with this kind of stuff. I'm waiting to see solar panels, so to speak,
on a phone,
on the back and underneath the screen of the phone, so that you can have smaller battery capacity, but it's always charging.
Oh,
I wonder if that would be
like
the
NFC and everything. You can just put your phone down on a table and it will recharge.
Assuming that you have
that technology on your phone, sure.
Yeah.
Very cool. Mm. Jensen Huang, founder and CEO of NVIDIA, said at the GPU Technology Conference in Beijing that Moore's Law is dead because it cannot keep pace with advancements in GPU design. Moore's Law is the observation made by Gordon Moore, co-founder of Intel, in 1965 that the number of transistors per square inch on integrated circuits had doubled every year since integrated circuit was invented. Moore predicted that this trend would continue for the foreseeable future. However, the pace has slowed down a bit in the subsequent years, but data density has doubled approximately every 18 months. Huang says that since the CPU transistors have grown at an annual pace of 50%, the performance has only been enhanced by 10%. He believes the GPU will take over. According to Huang, the top five e-commerce sites in China have already accepted NVIDIA Volta GPU architectures to support cloud services. And HGX-based GPU servers have been deployed by both Lenovo and Huawei. Huang claims NVIDIA's GPUs are the perfect solution for AI-based applications, suggesting he believes GPUs are set to play a larger role in certain aspects of computing rather than replacing desktop CPUs completely. He showed faith in NVIDIA's GPUs and claimed that they will be able to replace CPUs in the upcoming years.
Okay, so for anybody who doesn't know, GPU versus CPU. What's the difference?
What? Yeah.
One character.
Not even, like, it's just like that is the difference. You do CPU and then just add that, and it's GPU.
That is the technical term. And now everybody who has no clue what they are going, oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, the CPU is the central processing unit, the brains of the computer. The GPU is the graphics processing unit.
Yes.
Let's go back in time a little bit, Jeff.
Okay.
Think about computers, the evolution of computing. The CPU, the brains of the computer, was used for things like doing spreadsheets.
Yes.
Running an operating system and doing those kinds of thought processes. Didn't need a whole lot of power, realistically, in comparison to, say, 3D graphics. So if you're just doing spreadsheets and Microsoft Office and surfing the internet, the CPU is the central processing unit, the brains of the computer. You've heard of like dual core and quad core and now hexa-core computers and things like that. So you've got, 8 cores on your computer. That's fast. That has a lot of power.
Right.
Lots of threads going in. You've got, 8 cores. That's going to give you, several threads to go in, so thought processes of the brain so it can think about more than 4 things at once.
Right.
But not more than 10 kind of thing.
Right.
But it does it fast. So perceptively, it happens quite quickly. A GPU was built for graphics originally. So think about gaming and how gaming has pushed to like 3D and now virtual reality, and the real push is there to create really, really fast graphics.
Right.
We want high frame rates. If my kids don't have 60 frames per second on Minecraft, Dad's gonna hear about it.
See, I remember when I was excited about 30.
30 would be awesome.
Yep.
Okay, so think about this. So think about your 4-core computer processor. That's the CPU.
Yep.
Now think about a NVIDIA card. You just put in a 1070 in your new computer.
Right.
The 1070 has over 1,900 cores.
Wow.
Just get your head around that for a second.
Yeah.
They built this to be screaming fast 3D graphics and virtual reality.
Right.
It is extremely fast because it is a different target of what it does.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's evolved to the point where they're creating architectures based on this GPU platform to allow executable applications on this platform.
You're talking like AI?
Like AI would be a perfect example.
Okay.
Because AI has to think really, really quickly in order to be responsive like a human.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you're waiting for it and it's not realistic. So by using GPUs, we now have not just 8 threads of information that we can think about at one given time, very, very quickly, albeit. We have thousands upon thousands of threads
right.
that can be thought about by that processor at any given time.
Sort of reminds me of like right brain and left brain, to be honest.
They're two different components of the computer. So, but one was built for the brain and one was built for what they call the soul.
Right.
The gaming, you know, the power, the this is where it gets its power from. But now that you can now run things on the GPU, like a server, and I do my rendering in Blender on the GPU, and oh my goodness, is it ever fast.
Right.
Compared to CPU.
See,
it's ridiculous.
And that's why you want to have a really good graphics card.
That's why we didn't cheap out on the graphics card.
No.
Right.
It's almost become the most important component.
Absolutely.
I remember for the longest time it was the motherboard and the CPU were the two components you put all your money into. Now it's like, I could spend $500 on those two combined, but I got to spend $600 on
just the graphics
card.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. Just because of how important it's become.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we did. It may sound like science fiction, but researchers are closing in on the creation of an ingestible robot that can perform a variety of functions from within the human body.
Mmm.
Yeah, yummy.
Delicious.
At the International Conference on Intelligent Robots and Systems in Vancouver earlier this month, researchers from Switzerland presented a prototype of a gelatin-based actuator.
Gummy bears.
Gelatin.
Save me.
Actuators are the components that allow a mechanism to physically move. So while doctors can already insert machines like pacemakers into your body, those are stationary and also require invasive surgery. It's unlikely that the gelatin robots are very tasty, but they would have a wide variety of applications. The researchers in their paper explain that the components of such edible robots could be mixed with nutrients or pharmaceutical components for digestion and metabolization. Potential applications are disposable robots for exploration, digestible robots for medical purposes in humans and animals, and food transportation where the robot does not require additional payload because the robot is the food. Researchers write as well, fully edible robots would help to study how wild animals collectively behave. The robots could also take a role of animal prey to observe their hunting behaviors or train protected animals to do predation. And of course, once medical components are mixed into the edible composition, the robots could help preservation of wild animals or heal the inside of the human body.
So neat.
That's a lot to digest.
Ba-dum-bum.
Oh, dear. Okay, so anybody who's watched the show long enough knows that when it comes to robots, I'm a little bit skeptical.
I love them.
Yeah, but okay, so it's a gel casing, which should be
it's not a gel casing, it is gel.
It's made up.
Right, but that's digestible. So when it comes to the metal components, like,
does there need to be metal components?
Yeah, are there?
I don't know that there are.
Here's the fact, is that they, and when I say they, scientists.
Those people.
Yeah, folks that are in the know with this stuff and that are researching this stuff have been developing digestible, biodegradable electronic components. So we're talking resistors and capacitors that are digestible.
Right.
So they're not made of metal. They're made of other organic compounds. So
and that makes sense.
That makes sense. But the fact is you give yourself a Raspberry Pi microcomputer, and it can do a lot of stuff, but it doesn't...
I'm not eating my Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, it doesn't do any physical movement.
Right.
There's no physical movement.
Right.
An actuator is required in order to do the physical movement. So what we now have is something that can take these edible components that could make electronic things. Like you said, you can get a pacemaker, but somebody has to open you up and put it in.
Right.
So instead, let's say, here's the pacemaker, which has no mobility of its own, and make it mobile. Make it so that it can walk its way into your heart.
Right. Just have like a little nano robot that can just go in and maybe heal your heart. Maybe your heart just needs a little bit of extra gelatin.
These edible components, though, are not mobile.
Right.
So put an actuator on it, and now all of a sudden they become mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where would it store the information? So it's collecting information, potentially, if it's for health purposes. Where does it store this information? How do you recover it?
It's still really early in the kind of the announcement phase of this technology, but I think, you know, there are technologies like Bluetooth and being able to sync to a mobile device or something like that. Is that possible with organic technology? I don't know. Could it be, like, we've heard of Microsoft using DNA strands to store data.
Right. I remember that.
Like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say I love this idea for a lot of reasons when we come to, like, using it for human healing and such.
Sure.
I don't love the idea of changing anything in wildlife. Like, I don't...
How so?
I don't know. I feel like we can make... I guess we can consent and they can't. So even if it's an endangered species...
Hold on. You're concerned about impacting wildlife with a gel robot
that would heal them.
When you look at all across the globe,
no.
All of the ecosystems and animals we've destroyed. And you're concerned about a robot?
I think we're getting kind of mixed up here. So think,
okay. Yes. Okay.
So when we talk about predation, think about domesticated, or not even domesticated, but think about a center that helps animals that are either endangered or perhaps they've been injured. And they bring them back to health. Now, that animal is now acclimated to human contact. It is able to... it's not able to go back into the wild because we know it will die.
Right.
Because it will become the prey.
Right. Okay? I've made the logic leap. I get it now.
So if they were to get to create edible robots now... As a vegetarian, you can appreciate this. Now we have a prey that is programmable that the predator, this human acclimated animal that we're trying to bring back to predatory instincts, can attack this robot and eat it. And it can be digested and it can have nutrients, but they're not actually affecting other animals in that process.
All right.
And acclimating them back to predatory instincts so that they can be replaced into their original habitat. That's just one idea.
It's an interesting concept.
I am all in now. That was my one hang up.
That's right.
Okay.
Sasha's sold.
Yeah, it's not like they're feeding animals these
I was
robots
confused.
They're like becoming automatons.
They're like
I don't
parasitic,
think that's where they're going.
They're parasitic strange robots. No. All right. A couple in the U.S. have admitted stealing goods from Amazon valued at more than $1.2 million by repeatedly pretending that the items they ordered were damaged in the post.
Oh, no.
A couple from Indiana have pleaded guilty to postal fraud and money laundering. The couple faces fines of up to $500,000 as well as prison sentences of up to 20 years. Do not mess with Amazon. According to local newspaper, the Muncie Star Press, they used hundreds of false online identities to order popular tech gadgets from Amazon, including Samsung smartwatches, GoPro cameras, and Xbox video game consoles. The couple then contacted Amazon's customer service department to report that the items had arrived damaged or were not working, and Amazon sent out replacement products for free. They then sold the merchandise to another individual who resold the products to an unnamed firm based in New York. The couple and their accomplice were eventually caught after a joint investigation conducted by the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, Indiana State Police, and the Internal Revenue Service.
Wow.
So what kind of trail would they have to leave? Like,
to get caught?
Well, yeah. Like,
I think must have had to be backwards. It must have been that they found the New York final sale place and then went backwards, maybe.
You think so?
The fact that the Postal Service is involved makes me wonder if...
Well, these folks would have been receiving a lot of packages.
Well, right.
$1.2 million worth.
So would Amazon have been sitting there going, we have 800 customers all living at the same address. Like, was that the stupid flaw?
Postal boxes or something.
Maybe.
But even still, like, that would flag you to a certain area as getting a ton of...
Sure.
Like, even if you lived in a place like New York City, to turn around and say, you know, there's 800 accounts all having the same issues with tech in New York City where this has never happened before, like, that would be a flag of some sort.
Sure. That aside, though, I mean, you think about their delivery system when they're bringing it by air and they've got drones and stuff, but how much more so are people going to be tempted to grab that drone and run away with the product?
Right. I never thought of doing this. I never even thought of returning anything to Amazon.
Now,
no, I'm not going to do it this way.
No.
But I bought a juicer.
Yes.
And it was a lifetime warranty juicer. So I could have easily contacted the manufacturer and just replaced a part. But I asked Amazon and they said...
Amazon makes it easy.
Yeah, Amazon said, well, do it this way. It's been within 24 hours of you receiving the product.
Yeah.
Just return it, no problem.
I've returned things weeks later and they pay the shipping and everything. So if it's that easy to return it, so who takes the fall? It's the sellers. So you think about Amazon, you think, oh, that's a great online store. Well, no, it's really an online shopping mall, let's say, because the sellers that you're buying from are other companies, and they're selling their products and products that they warehouse to you as basically a drop ship kind of arrangement with Amazon. Amazon is the storefront, and they are pushing out their products. So if I buy a product, as let's say I'm this malicious user, and I buy that product, and I claim that it's broken, and they send me another one, now that company is down. Amazon always favors in favor of the buyer, not the seller. So I can make up any nonsense, you know, something was broken, and they'll replace it. That's Amazon's policy. It's always buyer is number one. And it's fantastic as a consumer to be able to have that kind of service, but it really can burn in a case like this where, hey, if I was a seller, that would knock me out of business.
Right.
So I sent my juicer back.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have had to. Is that the way, is that the case of it?
You sent it back for what, why? Why did you send it back?
I returned it and then just bought a new one.
Because there was something wrong with it. You said there was a part you needed to replace.
Yeah.
There was a part?
So there was a part that was broken.
Okay.
So I could have not returned it.
That's different than buyer remorse. Buyer remorse is getting the juicer and saying, I kind of wish it was pink.
Right.
And returning it for that reason. Now they can't sell it again. They can't sell it as new because it's used now. It's open box.
But this couple would get doubles of each thing. So how did they...
How did they not have to send back...
That's my question. Did I not have to send back my juicer, but just did out of honesty because it was broken?
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I don't...
Maybe you don't have to. I know that I have had a case before where I ordered some pillowcases. They were coming from China. It took a long time.
Yeah, I've had that.
And then they sent me another order. Well, then I had
two of them.
Right?
Right. And I have had similar instances happen. That happened with a mouse for me.
Right.
And it's like, I don't do those things but now that you make it, I'm like, that has happened.
Right.
Where something doesn't arrive.
So then how do they change their policy in a way to add that extra level of
You've
difficulty?
You've got to find protection for the seller.
Right. I know that OtterBox used to have it so that if your phone case was broken, they would replace it, no questions asked, as long as you took a picture of the broken case and sent
it. Yeah.
So maybe that's the case. Maybe you take the picture of whatever it is, proving that it's not usable, and then you don't have to return it because it's clearly not usable.
Okay. I bought a product for our dog, and the company that we bought it from actually sent the wrong thing. So I contacted Amazon and said the wrong product was sent, and it arrived directly from Amazon. It wasn't from the private retailer. And the response I got from the individual I was talking to was, okay, well, just throw that one out and we'll send you the proper one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just throw it out? You don't want it back? It's not worth it.
Yeah,
so it makes me wonder if this is kind of the case.
Mm. Right. So there needs to be a way that saves people.
Yeah.
Get your thinking caps on. Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.